Resurrect the Republic, Truth Radio Broadcast, on RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Good evening, and welcome to RTR Truth Media. This is Lori, Texas 101. Tonight, we've got Ken Dost and Liz Combs again, and we're going to be able to take your calls live. If you'd like to call in tonight, the call-in number is 1-800-313-0163. Again, that's 800-313-0163. Oh, sorry, 9443. So that's 800-313-9443. And Ken, are you there?
I am. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good.
I know we were talking a little bit last week, and we were going to go do this a little bit earlier, but the holidays got in the way.
Yes, yeah, they did. Yep. How was yours?
Wonderful. Do you have a good holiday as well?
It was okay. It was low key.
That's good. That's good. Couple of things when we get started. I know this is a call-in show so that people can ask you questions. Was there anything else that you've learned over the weekend or that you wanted to get across to us that you didn't get a chance to last week while we're waiting for callers to call in?
Well, I'm just getting trying to get the rest of the paperwork together, and the more I dig into this, and the further depth I go into this, the more blatant it just hits home how blatant these things are, and how simple at the very core of this is how simple it is. I mean, you've got people here that are just designing programs and deploying these programs into our systems, our government systems, and our financial systems and economic systems, and even our global systems, and just how easy it is for these people to operate to steal our identity. I mean, at the very simplest, what it is that they've stolen our identity, and they're just using our identity, and they put it to an electronic notarial certificate that they've converted to a digital key signature, and that's what they're holding people to, is just a signature. Well, on the other side of that signature is just blatant theft, just absolutely blatant.
You know, we were talking about it a little bit today around here, how much that's just, it's complete theft, it's complete deception, it's how do you do it, what's the path, it's set up to be confusing, to drive people nuts.
I think one of the biggest things is people are identifying with this, with the 1933 bankruptcy, and the bankruptcy's over, the bankruptcy's done with, it's gone. And I also think that, you know, as far as the Trading with the Enemies Act, you know, with all the new legislative acts that occurred between 1998 and 2002, and the court ruling of State Street versus Signature Financial Group, and the inaction of UCC Revised 9, Article 9, that's a lot of things that happened. I mean, that totally changed the whole economic system, totally, and the philosophy as well. And the bankruptcy, I mean, the bankruptcy became, bankruptcy is a patented process now. It's a business model. So, I mean, all the things that we're looking at from the 1933 and all the way up to 1998, I mean, all those things are really not pertinent really anymore, because you've got a whole different system in play now. And that's how we have to look at this thing. I think that's one of the most confusing things for people is to accept or even just learn this system that we're under now. It is hard. It's difficult. But once you learn it, you realize how blatant it is. I think it's going to be pretty simple as we start moving through this thing, because there's no way that they can really stop us going through trademarks and going through patents. And if you think about it for a second, you know, some people get arrested for claiming their legal name. You know, they're all cap, or I'm sorry, they're first, middle, last. We're not dealing with first, middle, last here. We're dealing with a derivative form of that. So, I mean, we have every single right to come in and make claims and make complaints and do actions Sessions, where he sees everything back, because my middle name, Kenneth W. Dawes, that's not my legal name. It is because I've accepted it. I've given jurisdiction on it, but in the end run, though, if you've taken my public personality into your private, then you're damn right I've got a claim. You're damn right I've got interest in that. So when you hear MERS or somebody, these attorneys come back and say, oh, you're not a part of that contract. Oh, yes, I am. I'm most definitely part of that contract. I am the contract.
Right. That's one of the parts that makes you speechless, as I am now, is you know, they've got this contract you don't even know is there. And it's on your name, and how is the name written? It's so complicated, and you're making it easy. Like I said the other day, you found pretty much the parent directory. If you're computer literate, the parent directory tells you how it's laid out, and it gives you everything. You've just got to know how to look for it.
It's not a look for it, but I think it's a mindset as well. Accepting the fact that, hey, my name's worth value. I mean, big value. And really, it's invaluable. And I think that gives us a sense of power, really, and confidence. I know it has for me. I mean, as far as dealing with these people now, it's my whole attitude's different, because I know that I've got them. But now we just got to get that right mechanism and dial that right mechanism in, and we know where it's at now. So in that respect, we're getting there. We're getting very, very close to busting this open. And I think what's going to happen here, I think when it does, you're going to see a lot of attorneys, I think you're going to see a lot of heads roll. I really do.
I know. They're already starting to. I'm already hearing some about it. I'm already hearing the changes that are happening and the strange things that are happening to people. And this is one of the things that, and I'm still wordless right now because of the things I've heard today. It's amazing what they've done. It's amazing how they've had it. And it's amazing that they are going to get in trouble. They cannot hide from this.
No, they can't. There's no way that they can. I mean, if you understand patents, you understand anything of them at all, you realize very quickly that, hey, wait a second here. They wrote everything down. All their crimes are written down and documented. So the evidence for it is prima facie. It's just bringing it to light and exposing it and putting it in its right position. And then they're done for. I mean, they can't defend. There's no way that they can defend this. There's just no excuse for it. This is just blatant lies, and it's a blatant. The thing that amazes me the most about this is how they've managed to. Well, maybe it doesn't amaze me too much. Managed to fool the public, and we got a public that is totally disillusioned, a legal system that uses codes and statutes like business models for attorneys, and it just amazes me how this has gone on for 20 years now since MERS since that MERS Nations Bank was instituted. And 20 years is a long time for these things to be going on, especially relying just on a lie.
Yeah,
and it is, it's just a lie.
And the thing is, with the MERS and 20 years and you're already thinking things that aren't true or true, you have to go back and double check yourself 10 times when you read that MERS. I'm still shocked by reading it. And that's one of the things. I'm not going to discuss it. People have to read it for themselves. It's that bad.
Some people don't get it. Some people don't see the connection to it. But when they do, it's like, oh my God, and I still go back to it quite a bit. And I've read that contract probably, oh God, a thousand times at least. And I go back to it every now and then, to refresh my memory, number one. And also two, because I see other things to verify the things I'm coming across and just shake my head at how they managed to capture that. I mean, think about this for a minute. You had a whole new economic system coming in. You had State Street in 1998, which was for patents, and then you had the 2001 revisions to UCC-9 in 2001. And here, sandwiched between that time, MERS and Nations Bank puts together an agreement that hits UCC-9 right on the head. Now, if you recall, I don't know if you knew anything about UCC 9 back then, but all those changes and all those revisions were pretty much a secret. For fair play reasons, they were a secret. They weren't allowed to be released to anyone. So somebody at Nations Bank, somebody had a hook in there because that contract is dead on. And that contract was 2.5, maybe 3 years before UCC 9 was even enacted, those revisions. And if you think to the greater length of that, they captured and enslaved every single person that was going to sign that Fannie and Freddie mortgage loan, which to date I think it's got to be well over, I think it was over 100 million mortgages like 5-10 years ago, you know. But I mean, you think about that for a minute. If it's a couple that's signing his mortgage loans, which most are, that's over 200 million people. 200 yep. million people that they captured and enslaved by this contract in 1998. It's incredible.
And I'm one of them.
I am too. You know, and it really is. I mean, you think about that. That's 200 million people. That's trillions of dollars. Trillions of dollars have been embezzled out of the people of this country, and that's a lot of money to put in the hands of these criminals. You know, that's just on MERS. You know, that doesn't account for all the other transactions, and it's mind blowing. It really is mind blowing how blatant it is.
Well, just ask yourself, who's the guarantor of the loan? Who's the borrower? What's actually going on? Go and look at your loan and have it audited and find out who the actual borrower is, if they'll tell you. Who the guarantor is, they'll tell you that. That's you. And then you read it and you go, holy smokes, this is insane, to say the least.
It is insane. I mean, and the one thing about it that nobody knew about, or that we were incorporated into, is in the Commonwealth of the state of Virginia. I didn't agree to terms of that nature. You know, so when you have a foreclosure or something, and, you know, here in Oregon, Oregon's not a Commonwealth. I mean, granted, we're under Admiralty Maritime. I get that. But the same time, though, this thing was not originated or was not generated out of Oregon, where I'm domiciled and where I executed this agreement. You know, this agreement was executed in terms and conditions that were years before I executed mine, but it was under the jurisdiction of the Commonwealth of Virginia. So, you know, if you're in foreclosure and you're thinking, wait a second here, that was originated and generated back there, all the monies that have been generated on top of this thing, and you're trying to foreclose upon me, you got to be kidding me. It's ridiculous. Yeah. And I think when you look in terms of that, when you look in those kind of terms, and you think to yourself, well, you know, you got all these states out there that are foreign to your state that you're in, and a handful of these states are the ones that are have control of these mechanisms. For instance, Commonwealth of Virginia, and then all of the foreclosures are being generated out of Delaware by what's called a Delaware Directed Trust. You know, and you got clearings going through New York. You know, you think of those aspects of it and those sales, and then you think of being put over across the pond over into England, and boy, you got a lot of sales going on, a lot of, you know, rehypothecated sales, and that's just on a presumed mortgage loan. And that doesn't count the customer lists that are being bought and purchased by CoreLogic and all these other people. I mean, it's mind-boggling.
Yeah, and then that's just one signature that you give them, and then it goes on from there.
That's another thing that's amazing with the Nations Bank Agreement. I mean, it's pretty blatant in there. It says that, you know, bankers and brokers can now sign your signature. What?
Yep.
Wait a second here.
Go ahead, Liz.
I just wanted to say that the process that Ken is describing is nothing less than money laundering. This is they pass these things around, and who can trail this stuff?
That's the thing, you know. I mean, think about it. You got so many different patents that are intertwining with one another, and all these different exchange programs and trading programs and platforms and indexes and all these things. You got so many things going on here, and I tell you, the one person that's got the carte blanche is not even the attorneys or the bankers. It's the brokers. The brokers got the carte blanche and all of these things. They're the guys that are the future forwarders. you know, that I have so many different customers and trading partners that, you know, it cuts off the chain of ownership, and the chain of ownership gets lost because, and this was, of course, done intentionally. But I mean, it's just incredible how much these things are trading and who has control of these things. And, you know, the sad part about it is like, wait a second. But it's not really a sad part. Actually, it's going to not be a good part for us, because as far as evidence is concerned, is, you know, you got these patents that take a piece of property and slice it up in all these different sections, you know, 32 different sections and slices, and then, you know, slicing it up from there. I mean, let's see if I've got it up here. I have a list here of, I'm going to find it here. I think I have it up. Of the different slices that are being created off of one of these patents for securitizations. I'm sure I'll find it here. Declaration, where'd it go? Oh, here it is. And we've got, oh, maybe there it is. Okay. We've got somewhere. I'll find it here in a second.
Yeah, but okay, this is just from the mortgage, though, that they're taking
This is just one patent, okay? This is one patent. This is one piece of property. So one house and, you know, just a house. They've got, let's see, a deed of interest in an asset and a fee interest in the asset. They got a deed of interest in the asset and an equity interest in the asset. They got a fee interest in an asset and an equity. Then they've got a pool of deeded assets that spin off of this as a deeded asset. And then a pool of deeded real assets and another set of deeded real assets. And then they go into the deeded tangible assets. And then they break it off into tangible, deeded intangible assets, and then throw on these qualified fee interest assets. Let's see here, terms of years interest assets that spin off into augmented terms of years, spinning off into complementary remainder interest. I mean, so you got all these different deeds that are spinning off this one mortgage loan that you supposedly have ownership of. Well, you know, it's these minor issues, these minor augmented slices.
So,
go ahead.
So if you're taking the deeds and you're taking these and you're splicing them almost like you do mineral rights. You have your water rights, you have your gold rights, your oil rights, your different minerals. They even break those up. They're taking the property you have, which you don't have the mineral rights on it. That's given to somebody else already.
Right, those are the rights.
You don't have the rights for the utilities. That goes to someone else when you even buy your home. So they're breaking them up into different rights even more, almost up to 32 times, because each one is individual. But they can break them up, it looks like to you, 32 times into different assets. Those are the assets they're making off the interest, because this is actually...
Yeah, those are the different different deeds and different interests that I've created off of this. So at the end of the day, the person that's really coming back and trying to claim that they have ownership of your home and are bidding on their auction, they have an infinitesimal slice of it that they won the lottery, essentially, is what they did. You know, they have there's no right whatsoever. I mean, your ownership, your possession in itself has a greater superior to anybody else's claim, but that's what they do. I mean, so it's like, wait a second here. If you slice me up in this many slices and pieces, then I want all those, they come back to me. You know, they're mine, but that's not the way they have it figured here. You know, and then you've got the attorneys, of course, control everything. I think the one thing that shocked me the most was finding out that attorneys are able to create stock certificates. I never knew that before. And when I saw that, I was just, wait a second. Why are attorneys creating stock certificates? You know, but then again, why should I be surprised? I mean, they're private debt collectors, and they're what was the term you and I? What's the term I mentioned to you a couple weeks ago, Liz? Do you remember? You had the P, I think, and I asked you if you knew what it was, and you said no. I think you did. I think you said you knew what it was, but you didn't know what the definition was. But it was an attorney.
I mean, you know what you're talking about. You're going to have to give me a second to think about that. Yeah, because we were talking about it was there was the debenture
This is a while back, but it was a different. It was at the end of the P, I believe. And you had a definition that you thought it was, and I thought it was too, until I looked in Ballantyne's and saw it was, and it was just an attorney. You know, so these attorneys have taken, you know, they've got so many different positions and roles for themselves. And I think what's really sad here, what's really alarming here is that because of these patented processes, they've literally sought out every single possible avenue, no matter how tiny a slice that they can reach to securitize the asset, and every kind of tax loophole, any kind of all these things. You know, so when it comes to the IRS now, you know, and I see what the IRS is doing now. The IRS has finally started to catch on to these things, and they finally started to catch on to the nominee fraud, which of course is MERS. You know, and if you read some of their circulars on nominees, they talk about, well, it's come to our attention that there's people that aren't beneficiaries that are signing for these things, and that can't happen. And it's nominees, and they're talking about MERS there. So I mean, the IRS is starting to change. And starting to, you know, come around to what's going on. They've got all kinds of expansions of their LLCs, so that's kind of their tacit way of giving remedy and relief. And it is remedy; it is good remedy and relief. But you're still kind of tied in with the system. But at the same time, though, it's like, wait a second here. You guys are complicit with this fraud. You guys are the ones that helped set this up because you guys issued these extensive. I mean, it's like 20, 30 page private letter rulings back in between like 1999 and 2002. Yeah, that was IRS, and they went line and step with these patents. So I mean, basically, what you did is you just gave the patent everything that they wanted to. So now you're coming back, and now you're finally starting to catch on to this stuff. So you know, if you send me a letter that says frivolous, I'm going to be piping mad, you know, because I got you guys on conspiracy and I think sedition by the actions that you guys have done. You guys have given the banks a line and step identity theft and fraud and. And that's really what we have here. I mean, the whole thing is just is an absolute. It's reprehensible.
It sounds like they've allowed different corporations, different banks, to take over the duties that they have to take care of these names and signatures is the best way to put it.
Well, you know, I think it could be that. Yeah, I think it's part of it. But I also think that it's in some crazy fashion, some crazy manner, that the courts and these officials think that you and I blew our due diligence by not knowing what MERS was.
Right.
And how could we know what it is? But I'm finding out though too that that's not really the case. That's not true though. I'm finding out that these agencies have no clue that MERS Nations Bank ever existed. That's what it's coming down to, and that's gonna bite some people in the asses big time at some point in time.
Right, and that is something because when people first heard about MERS, they found out I think it was five or six people were on the board, but they didn't actually work for the company. The company had no employees. It was just a basically computer house running itself. And, you know, the little bits that I've been able to pick up about MERS, it's getting quieter and quieter as time goes on and the corruption's found. But it's all a complete, complete deception to the people and to the courts.
Yeah.
And
well,
it's
a billboard that flashes fraud. And what it does is what it attempts to do is it's flashing mortgage loan, and mortgage foreclosure, you know, but it's not deviating from the fact that they're not referring to a mortgage of real property. They're referring to a mortgage and trademark, and that's the big, big issue here. And that's what nobody even recognized in the courts. I mean, everybody was saying, well, you know, MERS can't do this, MERS can't do that, and how did MERS get an assignment 2 years after the loan trust closed?
Right.
Those weren't the right arguments. The right argument is, you know what, yes, there is no chain of title because there doesn't have to be a chain of title because this is an intellectual property transaction. It's not a real property transaction. All the conveyances, all the mortgages, all the transfers, all of the assignments are all being done directly through the United States Patent and Trademarks Office. It has nothing to do with real property. All they wanted to do was to get that initial recording into the county so that they could document you as the owner so that they had somebody come back and steal a house from them.
Right.
And that's even wrong because, I mean, there's no ownership there as well because behind your back, they stripped it from you and turned you into a lessor. You know, so the whole thing is just a charade. It's just an illusion. that we fell for, in a big way. But see, the problem with it, it kind of is beautiful in a sense of how they engineered it, because they really, what they did is they took the best of Fannie Freddie, which was the most respected, well, at one time was the respected premier
lending,
Well, premier lending, and also, you know, the gold standard of the American housing industry, you know, and you know, they had this agreement that was put in place that guaranteed customers or consumers not really guaranteed, but kind of an implied warranty that, you know, you don't have to worry about negotiating with the lender anymore. We'll do it for you. We'll make sure everything's tidy within the four corners of the agreement, and you know, so there was this trust that was there, and then to make sure that the consumer was treated fairly, they put in uniform codes and statutes, and then they also, but also to treat lenders fairly, they put in where's my dog barking? They put in codes and statutes to ensure that the lender could what are you barking at? Stop barking. Put in a code and statute so the lender can collect. Well, you know, so they really played, they really engineered it beautifully to what our beliefs were and right into a system of trusted entities. And those trusted entities, my God, I mean, they just, that's got to be treason what they did by Fannie and Freddie, by allowing MERS into these mortgages without true representation. I mean, somebody had to think, wait a minute. This is going to blow up on us one day. I don't think anybody ever thought that. I don't think anybody ever thought. I would like to be around the room the day that somebody said, "Hey, I got an idea. Let's put MERS in. Let's just take off the circle R and not represent that as a trademark." And somebody said, "Oh, yeah, it's a great idea. Let's do that." I mean, I would have loved to have been in that room at that conversation, because you know that conversation happened.
Oh, yeah. This was around the time that they were doing all kinds of things, and they've just gotten worse from there. Just a bunch of people that thought they could rip us off, and they got caught.
They did a good job, though, doing it. I mean, they really did. I mean, go ahead.
One of the things I want to mention to everyone is this is a call-in night. If you want to call in and talk to Ken, this is what we promised you, second show where you could ask questions, and the call-in number is 800-313-9443. Again, tonight is a call-in night, and it's 800-313-9443. We're getting close to our half hour, Ken. We've got about 3 minutes left.
Okay.
But I wanted to mention that again, because I'd mentioned it right at the very front when people were just tuning in. So I did want to let people know, if they do want to call in, go ahead and call in. Michael, let me know you're there, and we'll get to you as soon as this break's over. But we've got about three more minutes before this next break's coming up. And with that, we were talking about these devious guys, and it's right around the 80s they really started with the securities and housing and finances, and it's
well,
just
you
kind
know,
of worse
the one biggest problem was that they did that nobody wanted to invest in housing because there was no money to be made in it. There was no risk in it anymore because it was all Fannie and Freddie, so the risk was gone, and the yields were low. So I mean, they had to spice it up a little bit,
They did.
They certainly did. They certainly did. One thing about MERS that kind of is a stark, leaves you scratching your head, and is really an indication of how blatant this is how on the Fannie and Freddie document side, there's no representation of the trademark at all. But if you're an investor in one of these pools and you pull up one of the their prospectuses, the circle R is everywhere. I mean, there's one paragraph where it's I think it was a Wachovia or Wells Fargo trust. In one paragraph, there was like five or six different representations of the circle R. I mean, literally shown a circle R.
Oh,
but yet
wow.
There's none on the Fannie and Freddie document.
Hmm.
What does that tell you?
They're trying to find it. On the next side, we'll take calls. This is Lori with Ken Dost on RTR Truth Media Reloaded.
Let me tell you how it's gonna work, kids. You work hard like your parents both did. Everything you earn by breaking your backs, we're gonna redistribute when we make our big tax. Hey, sit down, don't be a jerk.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Many people tell us about their experience with Extendivite. Just listen to what Glenn has to say.
Prior to taking it, I had diabetic neuropathy. The Extendivite reduced that significantly. Acid reflux was reduced. I had athlete's foot, very severe. Trimmed that down to about 75%. Dandruff almost completely gone. I had occipital neuralgia at the base of my skull. I was having migraines, reduced by about 90%. Heart palpitations, my heart would kind of stall out. I would skip a beat. Very uncomfortable. And when walking from downstairs going to sleep, by the time I got to the bedroom, which is just one flight of stairs, my heart was pounding, coming out of my chest. My vision was blurry. This completely solved that problem. Great product. Thanks.
Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Attention RBN listeners, Dr. Ignatius Piazza, founder of Frontsight Firearms Training, and Fate have come together to allow RBN to run another fundraiser till the end of the year. We didn't really expect this opportunity, but thankfully, it's here and running as you hear this. We've set a goal of 500 donations by the end of the year, which averages around 6 per day, 7 days a week. When you realize all the folks listening to RBN all hours of the day and night, we think our goal is realistic and extremely critical to keep RBN on the air. If everybody listening will seriously assess their ability with firearms and then take advantage of this opportunity, we feel our goal is very conservative. Please take the time to look over FrontSight's website to get an idea of an amazing facility and the world-class training that's going on there. If this interests you, you likely will have like-minded friends that would like to know. Tell them. If for some reason some listeners are not personally interested, consider sons and daughters, close friends, nieces or nephews, top valued employees, inform club members, share the opportunity with police and fire departments. It's not too early to plan Christmas presents for special people. This fundraiser has come at an extremely critical time for RBN because the dire need for equipment upgrades. We're running on the spare tire currently with no money to fix a flat, and the fuel gauge is bouncing on E. This is one of the most valuable ways you can help RBN financially because you get Commander lifetime membership value that is 50 times your donation and can be passed on forever. How many times during life do you get to leave a legacy? See more details and contact info on our webpage, republicbroadcasting.org, and thank you.
Welcome back. This is Lori from RTR Truth Media with Ken Dost. Tonight is a call-in night. It's 800-313-9443 if you want to call in. Again, that number is 800-313-9443. And tonight we have Ken. Ken, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Don't forget
there you
Liz.
Are. And Liz Combs as well. She is Ken's sidekick. They have been researching the patents, which if you look at the whole legal issue, they started in on the MERS contract and the foreclosure industry, and it's coming into everybody. You always come into the trust. You always come into what they're doing, the deception that they're deceiving us, selling your signature, breaking you apart, still coming into it. And he's got the what I think is the parent directory. If you know anything about computer programming, it's really literally how they set everything up. And that's what we're discussing tonight.
Wait a minute. I just mentioned parent. Can I make a comment on parent for a minute?
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, we're talking about names, and I see where a lot of people lump the derivatives together with the legal name, or the birth name, the birth certificate of birth name, and that's not really right. The way that these are all separate issues. Kenneth William Dost is a private corporation, number one, and it's also an estate. But it's also the parent of the subsidiaries. The subsidiary corporations are the derivatives. Kenneth W. Dost is my public personality, and Kenneth Dost is like insurance and public benefits and Social Security. Social Security does not recognize the middle name. They'll put it on a card, and they'll represent it as such if it's filled out that way. But in fact, per their own regulations, they don't recognize the middle name. So you got those two derivatives, Kenneth W. Dost and Kenneth Dost. As derivatives of a fiction, which it is a fiction, but we're not whole individuals. In any way, shape, or form, even though we're, you know, signing Kenneth W. Dost, and even though our taxes are that way, everything's that way. But to get rid of those things is what we need to do. We need to kill off those derivatives and merge those derivatives together in the private so that we can disappear into the private and then emerge on the other side as the living person, living man, Kenneth William Dost. This way, the person that's totally in control and on the other side of codes and statutes. And that's how they're killing us off. So when we talk about when people are trying to claim this birth certificate name, they've got to take into account what these derivatives really are. And really this comes into play, especially now, because we're dealing specifically with intellectual properties and UCC-9, and that's what they're dealing with. I mean, what you signed your mortgage loan as, which is probably more than likely going to be first, middle, initial, last, that's what you want to be addressing. You want to kill that thing off before you can get to the trust on the other, or the estate on the other side. That's real important.
So you have to pull all these pieces together to get whole again, is what you're saying, basically.
Yes, it's a foolish thought to sit there and say, well, to deny everything, to deny that you were a corporation, to deny that all these things that they did to us. And it's a foolish way to go because it's not being honest with yourself. I mean, you got to be honest with yourself. This is what they did to me. I didn't know this, and I know this now. You know, it's a part of growing up, and it's a part of maturing, and it's a part of coming into our own. And so, you know, these were things that we didn't know, but we can't deny that these things occurred to us. We could say, okay, well, now that I realize this, I'm taking these actions towards this. And if you get in the spiritual end of this and the God end of this thing, that's exactly what this should be. This is where we're kind of recognizing ourselves, and we're recognizing the fact that we do have extensions of ourselves out there. And those extensions out there, in this case, happen to be all these corporations and partnerships and trade names and all these things that people sit there and call fictions. They're not fictions. I mean, they're connected to you.
Right.
They're an extension of your soul that you got to bring home to you.
And you're meaning soul corporation. And mm-hmm. Just so we don't confuse people, because there's two sides of this thing that mean too many things. Now I forgot what I was going to say, but basically what you're telling us is become whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I always have been told to zero out.
You want to zero out, exactly. At the end of the day, the purpose, I see a lot of people also claiming, you know, $100 million the indemnity, but they're also claiming a bond for it, too. It's like, wait a second here. The idea of an incarnation, the idea of coming into this realization is that you do zero out. That's that you want for nothing and have everything. You know, so it's also to be like divine providence. So the key thing about divine providence is that it's dispensing to an end. You know, you're dispensing, so you're liquidating all the assets, and you get rid of all the assets to an end. So that when you leave this world, you leave nothing behind except what's left for your children, your heirs, and that's it.
Right. Right. That's your land, your property, the things that you should own and should own outright that they're trying to take here in
Right, and we don't want to leave that all caps name behind. So when we finally get to claiming that, it dies with us. When we physically die, it dies with us. But see, what they're doing is they're using these derivatives as an intermediary death to us, so that and it makes sense why they're doing it, because this is what kicks in the living estate and living annuities, you know, because even they can't spend it if they're really dead, right?
right.
So that's what they're doing. So what's being found civilly and legally dead is our derivative name. That's what they're killing, and that's what we've got to address. And also, too, it is a copyright law that to kill when derivatives are killed off and the licenses are terminated, title automatically reverts back to the copyright owner, which is us. And then what we're issuing, as far as documents are concerned, that's really going to be our first issue of copyright, because you cannot copyright your name. Not under U.S. copyright, you can't. It has to be some sort of literary work or sound recording, right, or something of that nature. So, you know, your declaration of life and your other documents that go with that, that's kind of your book. That's kind of like your copyrighted book, your first issue. And that's where you kill everything off. So, I mean, and that's by operation of law, too.
So the copyright actually has in it, if somebody wants to go and read, where you can start finding out how to kill the derivatives off.
Well, it does actually talk about that in there. Yes, it does talk about that in copyright law. Well, what they've done is they've used the copyrights as works for hire, and that's what a Fannie and Freddie document is. It's a work for hire, and so, you know, we're incorporated into this work for hire, and we're incorporated into all these confidentiality agreements that go with that. You know, so that's another one of the problems with all these things, is the copyrights and the codes from, like, Mindbox. Those are all copyrighted. All the computer programs, that's all copyrighted. But they're all works for hire, you know. But at the end of the day, we've got the superior title. Why? Because it's divine providence, and also, too, it's protected by the 1790 Copyright Act. That 1790 Copyright Act, statutes at large, protects us, our common law copyright, in the event, because there's a potentiality that the living man may be found alive again, or may be resurrected in body. And in the event that happens, he's got to have his, you know, he's entitled to that estate and the cess to quay. That's what a cess to quay is within that 1790 Copyright Act. And then, of course, it's protected by the Constitution then, which is, I think, Section 1, Article 8, no, wait, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 8, I believe, which is the copyright. And so we're protected by that, by issuing that first issue of which is the written work. And I would deem to say our declarations and our documents that go with that would be the claim to that. And I see if you go in copyrights, you'll see there are states and there are trusts that are registered to. And it's real interesting what people are putting in there. What makes up their package is photographs and some of the silliest things, some like song lyrics and things of that nature, things that are personal to that person, that gives them character and personality.
Because I know a lot of people got into putting their copyright in. I didn't know why they'd gotten away from it.
Well, you're talking about common law copyright, though. That's what you're talking about?
Right, right.
No, that's a totally different thing. I mean, that's we want to claim that. Yes, we do want to post that. But that doesn't take, by law, it doesn't take everything. It's that first writing, some kind of literary work or something posted to the U.S. copyrights that encompasses that. Because it's got to have something to receive those derivatives that are being terminated.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know. This is where it gets confusing. This is why we gave you guys the opportunity to call in. I'm going to give you the call-in number again. It's 800-313-9443 if you'd like to talk to Ken. This is the second part of the series that he promised to have a two-hour ask questions. So if you guys are wanting questions, please call in, and as he's blowing my mind here of trying to put it all together.
see if you can explain a little bit better what I about the copyright. Maybe you could explain a little bit better.
Are you there, Liz?
Oh, I didn't hear my name. Ken, I don't know how else to explain what you just explained. I mean, it's very complex. I don't know how to improve on what you've explained.
I know this is part of it. Like I said, it's the parent directory of what we have. And
yes.
If you know anything about computer programming, parent directory will show you where everything is on a website. And
right.
You've got the parent directory that shows us everything that's going on within the patents and trademark arena, which are here in the United States and worldwide, of the system that we have in place. It goes past the banks. It goes into, think of something, and it'll go into the patent area. It's the parent directory. And, you know, we're blessed that you have been able to take the time to look at this, because it's given us, if you've got somebody that looks at a certain area, you can show them where to go look under that parent directory 9 times out of 10. I'm not saying you know it 100%, but show people how to find it and back up what you're saying. This is mathematics.
The best way to back up what I'm saying is to go into the trademarks and go into the trademark assignments. I believe it's
right.
I believe it's the ETAS system. I think it's what it's called. Yeah, it's ETAS, ETAS. And you know, that's where all these agreements are that they're able to transact and do these transactions. And what they've done in these trademark and intellectual property transactions is a kind of like a revolving credit line almost. And what we're doing is they're incorporating us and our name as the grantors for whether it be a CoreLogic product or an Onnit product or a bank product. You know, so they're incorporating us into this agreement, and in this agreement we're agreeing that as long as we have a debt that's owed, we agree to allow them to have license use, full title rights and everything to our trade name, our named entities, and our named persons, and until the debt's paid off. Now in rational common sense board play, if you will, what they're really doing is they're just saying it's just a revolving credit line that we're guarantoring, that we're the guarantors of, and they're taking profits from. So really, what we needed to do is we needed to just kind of reverse that. And within these trademark agreements, there's subtle hints of what our remedy is and how to get out of these things. And that remedy does have to do with making a recording with the trademarks office and the patents office. With the trademarks office, it'll be specifically, I think it's a section 15 and an 18 statement, I believe. It might be 8 and 15. But it's a statement of use and a statement of unexcusable, no, I'm sorry, of excusable non-use. And it's a statement that says that, you know, I'm Kenneth W. Dost. I'm the owner, the living owner of the trade name, and that I've been in commerce since, you know, back when I collected my first paycheck. So I've been in commerce for a long time, and that I did not give permission for them to use my name. And that's where we start turning things around at that point in time, because now what we're doing is we're pulling our name from that trademark, and that's where we need to start focusing these things.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
This is going back to my Common Core days, because what you basically said is that they're using, you know, they have excusable reasons why you shouldn't be using they shouldn't be using your trade name or your name.
Mm-hmm.
A child through the COPPA laws, COPPA, I think it was 1989 or something like that. Sorry, I can't remember the year of them. They actually said that a child that's over the age of 13 is an adult. So you take an adult on the internet that uses one of these computer programs, and they can do whatever they want to, sell the data, do whatever, because of the agreement. Their parent is going to have to find either 16 through 18th of the trademark I don't even know what they're called again, because I was listening to this going, this really adds up to Common Core and what they're doing to the kids in school. Mm-hmm. Is that this is an unexcusable use of their name, and they didn't, you know, they're
they didn't
the child.
Approve it. Right.
Right, either the child or the parent. This is how they're doing it for Common Core for the kids, with what you just explained.
And see, now put trademarks in there. Put trademarks in their perspective for a minute, and think about what it is. A trademark is a good or product or service that you utilize, that you're purchasing, right?
Right.
And so, really, you're the owner of that trademark. To that certain, you own that trademark because you secured the product, you bought that product, or you're utilizing their services. But what they've done with it is through the Merge Nations Bank agreement, by stealing our trade name, they put us into the dark side of trademarks, let's say, the private side, which is into pools of trademark goods that are not identifiable and not disclosed to us. Now, they're very identifiable when you go into the trademarks, because you just follow a trademark. For instance, Own It. Own It used Mindbox, and I know that Own It used the Mindbox products I used was Art Enterprise and ART, which is Automated Reasoning Tool. I can trace ART through, now most people have Mindbox, actually all people have Mindbox really, and I could trace that from Own It to Mindbox to Brightware to Bank of America to a company over in Hungary where it sat for a couple of years, and now it's sitting over in Luxembourg, and I could track that trademark, so I know exactly where it's going. And that's how. So you don't just follow the money; you follow the trademarks in this case, and it'll take you through all the agreements that take place. And all these are listed underneath the trademarks, underneath the assignments. That's the beautiful part about this, because it's all there.
Right, right. And if you're one of the Common Core moms, if you go and take the trademarks and start doing this through the trademarks, you're gonna be able to find the exact same thing that Ken found through the mortgages. I guarantee you. And,
yeah,
and he just gave
thing.
You the remedy.
It's really the same agreements. Now what Nations Bank did, after they did MERS, after they executed this MERS agreement, they did this with the medical industry. And you know what they call it in the medical industry? In the documents? A mortgage. It's a mortgage.
Oh, wow.
So what they've done here is it's a mortgage in intellectual properties. It's a lease in real property.
Right.
So I mean, that's a very notable issue. I mean, the difference between a mortgage loan and a lease, two totally different things. I mean, if you've got a mortgage loan, then you're kind of bound to a contract. But if you got a lease, you can cancel that damn thing anytime you want to.
Right.
And when you cancel it, that's when the books are supposed to settle. So, and this is something they're going to get in trouble for. It's going to catch up to them. All the people that that did the rescissions and got ignored, that's going to catch up to these guys. It's going to bite them in the ass. Because I realize, and I remember when that Supreme Court ruling came out, it was very vague. I mean, it was very, very vague. There's no details to it whatsoever. And I understand why. And there wasn't. Hold on a second, please.
You all right? I have no idea what happened there.
Sorry about that. My daughter just doesn't know when I'm on the phone. Don't I tell her, don't interrupt. She interrupts. I lost my thought. Sorry.
You were talking about when they had the leases for medical industry mortgages for...
What the mortgages, a mortgage to, they pull a mortgage, Nations Bank executed these as mortgages to intellectual property. So what they were doing was they were mortgaging our name, and they were using that to be able to finance medical industry, insurances and doctors and all these things. So if you think of it in terms of that, you know, a real property transaction is really... It's not really anything tangible to begin with. What it is your signature. It's your signature that binds you to that agreement. And that agreement, that mortgage loan agreement, it doesn't exist because it was torn up and ripped up and converted to a lease, and it became a pledge asset. And what they're pledging is they're pledging the name. And at that point in time, it becomes a hedge bet. And so now they're betting on you and when you're going to fail and when you're going to default, and they're growing the annuities. Now, well, these are all things that should be coming to us because these are our properties. And if you look up what the definition for properties is, it's anything that can be touched or felt. It includes shadows and moving, inchoate moving. It includes money, of course. And it includes intangibles and tangibles. And so most of the things we're dealing with here is all intangibles. It's all signature.
And those are the things that you generally can assume don't have anything to do with what we're talking about. You just generally sign it, think you're going to get your property, and you're later told you're a tenant on your own land that you paid for.
If that's the case, why are you foreclosing me? If you're foreclosing upon me, I'm going to cancel my mortgage. That's what I was talking about. I was talking about the Supreme Court ruling and them not honoring people to the rescissions. That's going to come back and bite them because those rescissions were right substantiated quite easily because there never was a 3-day period after anything was signed.
Right.
Nothing was ever signed. It's all unilateral. So it's a lease to begin with. And so when you cancel a lease, you basically open up the books and balance the books on these things. And, of course, a lot of people that did these rescissions were ignored and got foreclosed upon anyhow. This is going to come back and bite them.
Yeah. Just going through it, definitely going to come back and get them. Mm-hmm. Because we're finding out too much about this. I'm still blown away by the trademarks and how it ties into what they're doing to everybody on the computers and Facebook and everything else. I want to go after them now on this one. Sorry, Ken. I'm like, wow, I learned something. I've got some more questions for you on that one, on the copyright, to find out exactly where it is. I'll get a hold of you this week because that is top of a deal. We've got about a minute until we're going to have another break, and I wanted to remind people that RBN is still having their fundraiser for Frontsight. I think it's Frontsight Armory. It's at $400 now instead of $500. It's going to be good until the end of the year. Keep this network going. It's one of the things we need to do. I know you can get a hold of Ken if you would like to donate to his efforts on Facebook at Ken Dost, KENDOST. And get these things going. We got to keep everybody going through the holidays. We've got guys that help us out. Try to keep up with housekeeping. This is also a call-in show, the call-in line. We've got a caller for the next hour, but right now it's 800-313-9443. And we will get to the caller right after this next break. And Ken, do you have a few more things you need to say before the break?
I could say a lot. I could talk real fast because there's a lot in, but I'll slow down a little bit here. This is a lot to absorb. It really is. But I'll tell you, the joy that comes to your heart when you devote the time to start understanding these things and it starts clicking, I'm sure you'll agree, and Liz will agree too. It's quite amazing once it starts sinking in.
We're going to go to this break, and we'll be back with the caller right after this next message.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Frontsight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $400? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsite.com to make it happen. You will hear this offer only on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell five.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.